Am I? Uh-huh.
Oh, baby, you. You work pharmacy. And you say you just push pills. And you hate those PBMs. Oh, baby, you. What's up, Z-Pack? It's your boy, Z-Dog MD. We today are talking about something pharmacy related, but also EMS related, emergency related, opioid related, psychiatry related, morality related, and science related. And that is the articles that we link to in the description. The first one, Middletown, Ohio, considers three-strike policy on responding to overdoses. This is an amazing story for many reasons. And we'll go through the article and then we'll say why it's amazing and we'll talk about why the heck is Narcan bankrupting our small towns? What's up with the opioid epidemic that we're even having this conversation, and what are we going to do about it? All right, you guys in? Let's do this. Minimal cursing in this episode, so feel free to hit like, hit share, share it with people, because this is a conversation we need to have as frontline healthcare practitioners. We can't let government and industry have this conversation without us. All right, you ready? Here we go. Middletown considers three-strike policy on responding to overdoses. Here's the summary. I'm going to create it in real time. Middletown, Ohio has proposed this controversial thing, and it says, and the question is, should people with addiction be given only two strikes before EMS services, fire, et cetera, stop responding to their calls? Now, why is this even a thing? Well, it turns out they're facing a lot of stress, says Paul Lally, the fire chief of Middletown. And by the way, I got to give mad props to fire departments, frontline emergency responders everywhere around the country, because they are struggling under an avalanche of overdoses with this opioid crisis that's going on. So we're faced with stress on our services, particularly the EMS services, where we can do 6 to 8 opioid overdose runs a day. Now think about this. You're running to respond to opioid overdoses and you're administering Narcan, which is, or naloxone, the generic name, which is an opioid receptor antagonist. So for people who don't understand that, what it means is that it competes with the morphine derivative that's trying to bind to the opioid receptor and blocks it. And by doing that, it can save your life if you're overdosing on narcotics. And by the way, the way you die from an overdose of narcotics is your respiratory rate slows, your ability to stay conscious goes down, and you stop breathing. And you can either suffocate that way, or you can aspirate. You can vomit, swallow it, choke on that, have inflammation in your lungs, and die. So Narcan can very quickly reverse the acute effects of opioid intoxication. So now imagine you're running, doing these opioid runs. It means you can't respond to fires. You can't respond to cats in the tree. You can't respond to kid locked in a hot car. It is taking resources, but more importantly, it's actually costing a ton of money. And this is why. So last year, they had 532 overdoses in this Middletown, Ohio, all right? Which is a perfect name because it's like middle America. It's basically everywhere, more or less, right? Although Ohio is disproportionately seems to suffer from the opioid crisis. So far, only halfway through 2017, there are already 577 overdose calls that they had. Like, that's crazy. They've tied last year already, and we're only halfway through the year, right? And last year, the department spent $11,000 on Narcan. Now understand, the government mandates that first responders deliver Narcan if they show up to an overdose. So they have to have this drug. And we're going to talk about why it's so damn expensive towards the second part of our show. So they spent $11,000 last year. This year, they've already spent $30,000. Now, I assume some of that is because they have a butt ton of overdoses, the same amount as all of last year. But also, the cost of the drug keeps going up. And remember, they're mandated to carry it. So now, people are dying, right? So the number of deaths last year were 74. So far this year, already 51. So this is a crisis, you guys. Now, leaders in the town are frustrated because they're like, we're broke. And what are we going to do? Because this is not a sustainable thing. So city council member Dan Picard, not to be confused with Captain Picard.
Jean-Luc Picard.
Make it so, number one. Overdose, Mr. Worf. Engage the Narcan on my command. Make it so.
He is not that Picard. He is the Picard who is proposing a three strikes system.
What he's saying is after the first two overdose rescues where EMS shows up, rescues you with Narcan, be on your way, the person would have to perform a community service for the equivalent amount of the money that was used on the life-saving response. So if it was a $4,000 administration of Narcan, you'd have to do $4,000 worth of community service, which in Middletown, Ohio, probably would take you 10 years because there isn't that much work in the whole town, right? I made that up. And it was very prejudicial towards small town America. Wouldn't you say, Tom?
Lehan works in Middletown in the ER, and she says sometimes we see 8 ODs a day here.
Wow. So thank you for the frontline perspective. Keep feeding us comments on this because I think this is crucial to understand. So Picard said, look, after that community service is done, you can continue to get services. However, when the third strike happens, when the third call for overdose happens, if the dispatcher determines that the person who's overdosed is someone who's been part of this program for two previous overdoses and they haven't completed the community service and haven't cooperated in the program, then they just wouldn't dispatch EMS to respond. Weigh that for a second. 911, my friend is dying here. I think they've overdosed on heroin. What's your friend's name? Jean-Luc Picard. Jean-Luc Picard in our system says here he's already overdosed twice, was supposed to do community service, but didn't. So we're really sorry, but we are not going to come. So kind of figure it out yourself. Maybe try some CPR, pray, that sort of thing. Guys, really, really weigh that for a second. All right. So that's what is being proposed. Now, the fire department said that they are required by law to provide Narcan if they respond to the overdose. So they would just say, we're just not going to respond, right? Because there you go. Now, Picard said this plan is not aiming to solve the drug problem. Duh, because it's not going to solve a drug problem unless you want them all to die. That will solve a problem.
Yes,
but more will replace. That's Logan's plan because, you know, obviously opioid addiction is a pure moral failing and has nothing to do with physiology, the lack of free will, or the availability of highly...
Those are big drugs. Words, Z.
They are big words. I'm not sure I understand them, Logan. So anyway, so Picard said this plan is not aiming to solve the drug problem. It is an attempt to save the city's finances. Because as we know, the city's finances are more important than the tax-paying citizens that create the finances that allow the city to... Of course, the argument would be these guys maybe aren't paying taxes. So that being said, we've got to do what we've got to do to maintain our financial security, and this is just costing us too much money, said Picard. Until legal advisors look at the plan proposed by Picard, the fire department is applying for grants and accepting donations to fund more Narcan. So they literally have a tin cup out.
They're like, we're going to have the Narcan ball, people. Pass the hat, all right?
It's amazing. It's like Narcan for the poor. Narcan for the poor. Now, let's just...
You said something interesting to me earlier before the show when we were talking about this article, and you said that you think that this is just this town's cry for help because they literally don't know what they're supposed to be doing about this problem. It's bankrupting them.
Yeah, because this is what I suspect happened here, and maybe I'm wrong. Picard was like, number one, come. Listen, this is a big problem. We are going to be bankrupt. And the only way for us to get out of this hole is to stir the pot. The legal people will never let us actually do a three strikes out. But Mr. Worf can pretend he's not going to respond. That will generate outrage outright, right? Stick and move, don't fight. And then we can raise money. So, and raise awareness. And I think that's what's going on. This is their cry for help. They're saying, guys, we're dying over here. People are dying. We're bankrupting our system. Look at us and help us, because this is, if you think it stops in Middletown, Ohio, you're crazy. So, let's take some comments. I'm going to grab my phone from the other room. Tom, take some comments. What's
that? Hit it.
Yeah.
Kristen wants to know, do you think that Narcan being so readily accessible has made overdoses increase, Z? And Z's not there, so I'm going to answer. Yes, definitively. I think that being a drug addict is more of it. I'm kidding.
I'm not.
I leave for a second. Tom takes his whole thing right of Phyllis Schlafly in 1 second. No, I think the availability of Narcan is a response, not a cause for increased drug use. People use drugs for a variety of reasons, but the easy availability of Narcan is not, in my estimation or experience, one of those reasons. Now, there are some communities that are actually administering over-the-counter Narcan, and let's actually let's talk about, as I pull up your comments so that I can see what's
going on. For instance, though, Jean says she sees sometimes the same patient 5 times in a day.
Right.
For different Narcan-related overdoses.
Well, you know, here's Logan's meme. Overdoses from heroin rise since Narcan introduced, but that's none of my business. Well, actually, you know
it's
what?
It's cold-blooded Kermit.
Let me think about this a little bit more than maybe I've...
Jean says she sees something.
I got your comments now. Let me think about this a little bit more than maybe I did initially. So, first of all, there's no evidence of causation that making Narcan more available is increasing overdoses. So it's just like anti-vaxxers saying, well, you give them 5 vaccinations and then autism happens because they're correlated temporally. Well, the reason Narcan is more available is because there were more overdoses already, and then that trend continues to rise. So there's no evidence that the Narcan availability is causing more overdoses. Now, we could be wrong. We could measure it and see, you'd have to do a randomized controlled trial where Narcan isn't available and Narcan is available and see the number of overdoses, right? So it'd be different communities maybe with different laws. A very hard and possibly unethical study to do. So it's a valid question. My intuition says no, though. But again, it's intuition.
You know, I see an interesting sort of parallel between Narcan and the morning after pill in terms of people feeling like it's a moral failing and it's not available OTC yet, all those kinds of things. Do you see it? You see that same?
Well,
I
could see that they are on a spectrum of people applying morality to a medical issue. So the morning after pill, meaning is it birth control or is it abortion, right?
Right.
It's both.
It's both. no, I mean, look, this is a valid question. Right. Obviously, I'm going to come down on the side of it is birth control because a 2-cell embryo to me, and this is just my conception of when life is not a embryo that you're aborting. And you may disagree with me. That's okay. But it is. It's a moral application, right? Because these are not cut and dry issues. And the same goes with Narcan. Is it a moral failing to be an opioid addict to repeatedly overdose? And should you be punished with death? In other words, the system saying we're done with you. Is that going to help the finances of the town? Maybe. Is it going to, until someone sues, right? Because they didn't respond by mistake. They got a name wrong. The dispatcher screwed up and they didn't respond to a child who had died and thought it was an opioid abuser. And now the town is sued for $10 million for the lost life of this child. So the finances can go all different ways, right? But the question is it going to deter more overdoses to do this? I'm going to probably say probably not. Because
Logan, put this meme back up. Is the thought on this meme that heroin is so dope that I'm going to take just like a bunch of heroin, bring myself right to the edge, probably die, and I know that they'll bring me back, and I don't have to take any responsibility for it?
Well, you know there's going to be people like that, Tom. There's going to be people like
Shauna
that.
Shauna says, in our areas, we're seeing Narcan parties. People know when Narcan is available and push the limits.
So that's
okay.
What I just
said. There's some on the ground empirical evidence to contradict my intuition that it's not increasing overdose rates. So give us more evidence. And if you see the opposite, let me know. Because that's why we have these conversations. I want to see what is actually happening. And you know who needs to be having the conversation? Us, like frontline healthcare people. Right, people who are actually doing this on the ground. And so the EMS guys out there, the people in the emergency departments that are seeing this, let me know what you're seeing, because this is a platform to spread what you know. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, unless, Tom, you have another comment you want to read right this second.
No, hit me.
I wanted to talk about why Narcan is so expensive. So, guys, would you worry as much if Narcan were free? So, in other words, the government just mass-produced it and gave it out to everybody in the water. It was easy to do, and then people are deciding they're going to do a lot of heroin, but they're not harming anybody. This is an interesting ethical and moral question. So now the Narcan is free, they can self-administer, or family can administer it. Is it now still the same problem? Do you still judge them with the same moral lens?
Well, as two conservatives here, pragmatist and crazy guy, I say I don't care if it's cheap. Logan says moral failing.
Moral failing, right? And now as a moderate progressive, I would say addiction more often than not is a pure disease, that morality plays a very small role in it, because most of our illusion of free will is just that, it's an illusion. We make choices, but a lot of times those choices are predetermined. And so we have to treat it as a systemic issue and as a personal disease. So to do that, it's less in the realm of morality and in the realm of what systematic changes can we do, and then on the personal level, what changes can we do to actually impact the opioid epidemic? Well, the first thing in my mind is you got to make Narcan affordable, because now we're talking about people dying. And to me, that is the worst possible outcome of any equation, that human suffering leads to dying. So we have to prevent that. So we have to make Narcan affordable. So one of the pieces that I would say is, why is it not affordable? Well, the second link that we shared with you guys is a New England Journal of Medicine article about the rising price of naloxone, the generic Narcan, and risks to efforts to stem overdose deaths. And then we can go back and talk about, is it even the right thing to do to increase availability of Narcan, or should we be attacking the socioeconomic forces, the medical forces that are increasing opioid abuse and death, right? So this naloxone piece, I'm going to summarize it for you as I read through it with you, okay? So the FDA first approved naloxone in 71. By the way, it's written by Ravi Gupta and Nilay Shah and Joseph Ross, an MD, a PhD, and a Bachelor of Science in New England Journal of Medicine 2016. 71, it had Narcan, the brand name, for reversing opioid intoxication and overdose. Now, we've all given it in the hospital, if you work in the hospital, 0.4 of Narcan. Sometimes we'll give one, sometimes we'll repeat 0.4. And in 2014, the FDA started fast-tracking stuff. So they fast-tracked approval of the auto-injector formulation called Evzio, made by a pharma company. It's a fixed-dose single injector designed to allow people without medical training to reverse opioid overdose. So it's very, you know, it talks you through it. You put it on your thigh, it injects. So it's kind of like the automated defibrillators you would see in an airport or a public space. It allows anybody to administer Narcan, whether or not they have training. Now, when this came out, it initially had a certain price, I forget what it was, like 300 and something in an auto injector, and over time it increased to as high as $4,000. Now let's talk about what's going on there. And generic Narcan wasn't available for a while, and then there's a nasal spray Narcan that was fast-tracked in 2015. It's also marketed as Narcan, and it's a 1 milligram dose, right? And they've been using it, it had been used off-label for a long time. So that's just the nasal absorption of it, it's very fast. So now, in 2013, 80% of the Narcan was for heroin overdose, but there are twice as many deaths from prescription overdose than heroin overdose. So that's kind of an interesting statistic. And the federal agencies then started recommending increased access to naloxone around 2013, particularly for prescription opioid users. So they were even saying, well, maybe if you have a high enough dose, and let's go through this. So earlier this year, CDC actually recommended clinicians co-prescribe naloxone, Narcan, to patients taking opioids and concurrently using benzos, Ativan, Xanax, Valium, et cetera. Or if they had a very high opioid dosage, like the equivalent of 50 milligrams of morphine per day, and the patients with a history of overdose or substance abuse, they were saying, maybe you should just give this with it. So this is interesting. And already now, if you're Logan and you think opioid abuse and addiction is a moral failing, this doesn't make sense to you. If you're me, I believe in harm reduction. This makes perfect sense. But then the question is, what ends up happening to cost? So let's read this. The 2016 Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act builds on these guidelines and calls for additional grants to expand access to naloxone by means of provider training and drug purchasing, for instance. Okay, so similarly, states have increasingly pursued initiatives to improve access. Now, here's an interesting piece. Historically, Tom, I bet you didn't know this, it's been illegal for doctors to prescribe medications to a third party on behalf of a patient. So in other words, I go, Tom, you're Logan's keeper. You know Logan's a derelict drug addict. I'm going to write a prescription for Tom for Narcan so he can use it on Logan if needed. That's illegal. So I can lose my license. Let me just pull this up here. So it's been illegal for prescriptions of Narcan for third parties, such as family members or friends of patients at risk. Now, one new approach adopted by 40 states so far is to offer clinicians various levels of immunity from criminal or civil prosecution for third-party prescriptions. And so isn't that interesting? So kind of looking the other way when doctors give Tom the prescription to take care of his brother who's an addict. So that it's interesting. And again, it's going to mean more Narcan available at the point of where it could actually do good.
What if I become like the Narcan guy for the neighborhood, though?
Right. So there's
like,
no,
hey, go see Tom. He got that Narcan, y'all.
Narcan parties.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly, from the point when I introduced you to this concept of third-party prescriptions of Narcan, you jumped to the most larcenous, like, what's the most evil I could do?
Welcome to America, Z.
And that's true. And actually, all joking aside, that's exactly what could happen in certain communities. You'll have the Narcan guy who goes to all the parties, he gets paid extra, and he funnels the Narcan.
Well, listen, I grew up around some drug addicts, and because I was smack dab in the middle of the opioid epidemic, our generation, and I knew drug addicts who would tell other drug addicts, yo, dog, I got that Suboxone, Holmes. I can hook you up, yo. You want some?
Why are they all Mexican? You made a Mexican. That just
That's not Mexican?
That was pretty Mexican.
That was just your white criminal
your white
accent?
Yeah. You said Holmes.
Homies.
Sherlock.
Hey, Holmes.
Well, Holmes is just a great word.
Holmes is a great word. It's an underused word. All right, let's keep reading this. So, unless you have something to say, Tom.
No, go ahead.
So the nasal spray, the Evzio auto-injector, have been increasing in price. So a two-dose Evzio package was $690 in 2014. Now it's $4,500, and that's a 500% increase in 2 years. Now, if you dig into why that is, there's all kinds of reasons. The pharma company jacks it up because, and their rationale as well, the people who get it free from insurance, you know, we have to make that up for people who, like, are paying cash, and also the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit managers that we talked about in another episode, there are these rebates that they give to the insurance companies, and so the real price has to be, we have to put the list rack rate higher, and also we need to profit from this crap before a generic comes out, and we got to grab as much money as we can from this crisis before we're not able to. That is the actual reason the price is $5,000, guys. Let's be honest. And when fire trucks and EMS are mandated to carry it, that's a boon for the pharma industry. It just is. So we have to look at that when we weigh the systemic cost of the opioid addiction and a crisis and what we can do about it. So here's the sort of takeaway from this article. They think that Narcan's price increase is part of an overall trend of increasing prescription drug prices for both brand name and older generics. This is true. Public frustration with these prices have led to, you know, all kinds of hearings and all of that. And so there's movements on how to address this. They believe, the authors believe, that such policies should explicitly call on manufacturers to reduce the price of naloxone and increase transparency regarding their costs, particularly those related to the development of new formulations. For example, Evzio's price jump significantly without explanation the month before the CDC's co-prescription guidelines were released. So they knew CDC was going to make these guidelines. They jack up the price because they know now doctors are going to be prescribing it. They know insurance has to cover some formulations of it, so they do that. Now, you guys are free market guys.
Well, that's not free market. That's straight up crony capitalism.
There you go. That's 100%. What I think. I'm a free market guy, too. That's not the free market. That's BS.
Yeah.
So we agree. So for example, now let's see. So what they're talking about now, some senators, Susan Collins of Maine, Republican, Claire McCaskill of Missouri. Claire is near and dear to my heart because she ran the Dr. Oz hearings. So even a Republican like Logan can appreciate hating on Oz. Although, you know, I bet you didn't know this, Logan. Dr. Oz is very conservative. Politically.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah.
You knew that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. I actually didn't know that. Many doctors are. So have sent letters asking naloxone manufacturers to explain their price increases. That seems a little weak to me. Guys, we would like you to explain why you're jacking us. It's like, well, we're jacking you. Deal with it. You need something with a little more teeth than that, in my opinion. And so there has been some efforts to talk about what the government could do. So the government could buy naloxone in bulk, which would create stable demand that might motivate additional companies to begin manufacturing the medication. So again, good old-fashioned competition, but with a government purchaser. So it's a hybrid idea. And that's a strategy that they use in vaccines. So vaccine manufacturers, like when H1N1 happened, that's kind of like what they do, right? So it kind of works. Second, the government could invoke federal law 28 U.S.C. section 1498, what a bunch of nerds, to contract with a manufacturer to act on behalf of the United States and produce less costly versions of Evzio's patented auto-injector in exchange for reasonable royalties, an approach that was used for procuring Cipro during the anthrax threat in 2001. Remember that? So everyone wanted Cipro to prevent infection with anthrax is ciproprophylaxis if you've been exposed to that white powder that someone mailed you, right? And so the government says, okay, we're going to actually manufacture it through third-party private private groups, and we'll pay royalties to the original patent holder. So that's another approach that might work. So what do you guys think? Any thoughts on this? Let's read some comments.
I have a good comment over here from Tony. And Tony said, I hate to say it, but if you've overdosed three times within a few months, then let them die. Maybe it'll start to slow down the overdose rate because they'll start seeing that EMS ain't going to just save you every time or start making them pay for Narcan the first time. And if they don't pay, then they don't get a second time.
So I'm going to guarantee you that was Tony.
Tony.
So Tony's going to get people responding in the comments who will pile on him and call him a monster and say you're inhuman and you would inflict a death sentence without trial on someone and so on and so forth. I know that because that's how many people think about this. But I'm going to actually defend Tony quite directly. And I'm going to say what Tony is doing is he's taking in a human accountability stance, and he's saying there has to be some line that we draw where we actually hold people accountable for their actions. And this assumes that people are actually an author of their actions, and this is debatable. So I'm going to defend him and say that's a valid stance if you believe in the accountability theory. And so please don't pile up on him. Make a cogent argument, ethically, morally, scientifically, why the opposite is true. Other comments.
Frank says, I treated a heroin overdose with Narcan after she was awake and we were chatting. I told her about the Narcan we gave her and how it would become publicly available soon. I asked her how she'd feel if her family kept a dose in the house for her if and when this happens again. She said, no, that sounds dumb. If I knew my family had Narcan for me at home, then I'd feel comfortable using even more heroin. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to hear her side of the story directly from a heroin user.
You know, it's funny, I'm sort of hearing the Z-Pak's comments, I'm sort of slowly being convinced that maybe the availability of Narcan is contributing to excessive use of narcotics in patients who are already addicted.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's leading to new addiction.
Aaron says that's kind of like using abortion as birth control, right?
But it's like, why would you want to get better if you knew there was, you know, just some magic thing that you could fix yourself?
And that's a valid, and that's human nature, because now you have an out, right? Mm-hmm. Now, abortion as birth control is something I've seen used in inner city clinics where I've rotated through, and it's really quite heartbreaking because there's a thing called birth control, which is very effective at birth control, and it does not need to progress to that late stage. So the question is there an analogy here? I the more I hear you guys talk about it, the more I'm interested in exploring it. So, other comments?
Let's see. I like the Australian system where the government buys all meds and sells them to chemists for near cost. My Cipro was $14 without insurance while on vacation there, Jennifer says.
So it's interesting. I've had very many people message me about the Australian medical system saying this is a good model. Now, I bet there's so many differences with the U.S. population that it wouldn't be a scalable thing here, but I want to explore it more. In fact, what I want to do, Tom, is I want to take an all-expenses-paid trip to Australia with you guys. And when I say all expenses paid, I mean someone needs to sponsor us. We'll go to Australia and we will explore their system because we have a lot of fans, a lot of ZPAC members in Australia. And they say what's happening is a lot of the pressures in the Australian system are actually pushing them to become more like the U.S. And so is this actually a real thing? I would love to explore it and eat hella Vegemite and listen to Men at Work.
Jen says addict equals all elephant, no rider.
I was saying that. Who said that, Jen?
Jen and Joe Torrini.
What an amazing insight.
They're one of those cute couples that share a Facebook.
What an amazing insight. By the way, that's totally weak. Don't do that. Kidding.
It's only weak for Joe.
Could you imagine?
Power move.
Like, yeah, exactly. Z-Dog MD and Mrs. Dog. That's one word. That's my new handle. No, I think you're spot on. And when we say elephant, it's all unconscious, driven, patterned behavior looking for dopamine. And that's why I say I don't think free will has a significant component in a lot of these automatic behaviors. And you can disagree with me, but we're going to share the book Free Will by Sam Harris, which may convince you otherwise. But if it doesn't, we can still have this argument. But I think that's true. It's all elephant in addiction. And the rider is just there along for the ride. Oh, there's Narcan, so do your thing, elephant. Maybe that's how it goes.
Jason Morrison says, especially with high chasers, You always want to get the tippy top of the high, but pull back just a bit because you don't want to kill yourself.
Right.
Now, have you heard this about heroin users, that it's like chasing the dragon the first time's like so amazing and they can never get back there?
It's true of almost every addiction, right? Like, I remember the first time I heard a really good vacuum tube-based audio system.
Same thing.
I was like, oh my God, the dopamine, it's so beautiful. Listen to that jazz. And then I was always trying to chase that same sensation, and that's the stupidest addiction possible, but it's very expensive and it will destroy your family. However, this is the thing, right? So it is constantly trying to ramp it up. That's why our patients are, you know, will try to manipulate us in the hospital if they're addicts. Now, what's interesting, where I didn't see this was in patients with, like, say, sickle cell, who were clearly dependent on narcotics, especially when they had a crisis. And they weren't trying to get high. They were like, I need this much drug now to dull this pain. And remember, there may be some sensitization to where the more opioid you use, the more you need to use, and the more the pain threshold decreases, right? We've seen all the opioid addicts who are just, they don't want to be stuck with a needle because it's so painful, right?
Now, let me pitch you something, Z. So you said that, you know, we may be able to give Narcan to a family member, right? And that family member could then administer the Narcan. A lot of these family members are sick and tired of dealing with these severe addicts who are their children or their loved one. And I don't know if they even want to do that half the time.
I think
I mean, is that almost enabling?
Yeah, so there are a lot of family members who've messaged me where they feel like they're at their wit's end with their loved one. They wish they could do something, but they also want them to have some accountability, and they've just had it. And so this is one of the most heartbreaking things, because this is, again, it's your loved one. They have this disease that's out of control, but their behavior appears so morally bereft of any accountability that you have to, you feel like as a family member, you have to give them tough love, right? And the question is, again, this gets to the component of compassion, which is concern for and love in the face of suffering, versus empathy, which is feeling their pain and responding in an enabling way, which is damaging. So this is a complex topic, and we'll probably have to do a whole separate show just on that.
Because addicts don't change unless they hit rock bottom, right?
Well, that's so, one theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one theory. Yeah, and some people disagree with that theory, but it is a theory.
I think you would have to define addict under that theory, because I think severe addicts don't change unless they hit a rock bottom.
And then that's entirely possible. Alcoholism, et cetera, this is all a type of addiction. Guys, I think we should wrap it up, because Tom and I have to go to the airport. We're flying to Houston to speak at the National Athletic Trainers Association.
Ooh.
I am super stoked, man. It's going to be like 6,000 people in Houston at the Houston Dome. I actually don't know. I think it's at the conference, the convention center.
The Houston Dome.
So,
you guys Astro Dome?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore, does it?
The Houston Dome.
No. Sports?
Houston, we have a problem. Sports? Sports? What are you saying? I don't understand this sports, Tom Hanaba.
How's the hockey ball, Z?
And so, goal! So, we're excited because we're going to be inspired and try to inspire groups of people who they're on the front lines, actually, these athletic trainers, keeping people out of the emergency department, triaging them, taking care of stuff in our high schools, in our colleges, in our professional athletic organizations, and in back offices of hospitals, and hardly anyone knows what they do. And when I got on a call with them, I was like, you guys are amazing. So I'm inspired to be able to talk to them tomorrow. Tom's coming with me to press the flesh, be my manservant. We're not going to share a room this time, Tom. I'm a little bummed about that.
I know, man. Who's going to sing me to sleep?
On my own. And who's going to rub my feet? No one. No one. I'm going to have to hire, like, the bellhop. I'll be like, look, there's a $5 tip in this if you can rub my feet. Guys, this is a serious topic. Hit share. Give us your input. Spread the word about this. We have to have a voice in this. These guys are laughing, which means they've probably found a meme or a horrible comment.
Somebody's talking crap about Tom.
Well, yeah, Tom's a loser.
Somebody said, Tom is kind of plump. We're not friends anymore, Brian.
Okay, listen, bro. Tom just hit that little like button in reverse.
You can overdose and no Narcan for you, Brian.
No Narcan.
Actually, it's kind of funny. This is the last time we were in Texas in Austin. We met these nurses and in person, and they were like, oh, my God, Tom's so skinny. And Tom was like, well, what do you mean? Well, you don't look so skinny on camera. And Tom was like, well, the camera adds like
20 pounds,
a couple kilos. He used the metric system just to throw him off.
Everybody knows the camera adds 35 pounds. All right. That's a fact.
He went to film school. He knows this. Guys, we love you. Thanks for being a part of this. Spread the word, and we out. Go, 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 go.
I'm I. Lavish, uh-huh.